everybody. This is John Tatey welcoming you back to Pop Mom, the podcast where culture is relative. Yes, it's time again for my mom, Bonnie Tatey, to share her view of pop culture, small town life, and the riddles of human nature. On this episode, we discuss the classic episode of The Simpsons, 22 short films about Springfield. Let's bring Mom in now. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Johnny. How are you?
Oh, I'm very good. Although my car is in the shop, my beloved Volkswagen. I think I talked on the podcast about, maybe not, but I think I talked last year about the extremely expensive transmission replacement I had to do on this car. And it was one of those, who do I just buy a new car moments.
Yep.
And I was like, no, a new car is still more expensive than this. And it's such a pain to wait for it and to figure it out and to figure out how it works and what's wrong with it. And I like my car. I just want my car to run forever. It's a Volkswagen Jetta. It's 10 years old now. It's a hybrid, which they didn't make very many of. And so when I bring it into the dealer, they're always like, ooh, what's this thing that we have to work on? And I think it probably wasn't the most reliable model of Volkswagen. In any case, the check engine light went on, even though it's running fine, and I brought it in, and they took 2 days to figure out even what was going on with it. And then they called me to give me the total after sending me. I did talk about this because I talked last year about how they send you the text message with like the huge bill. And it's like,
yeah.
Do you want to accept or maybe later? Those are your two options. But anyway, one thing I talked about last year on the podcast was they didn't actually call me to talk to me about it, but maybe they heard the podcast, because as soon as I got this email, I also got a phone call from the guy at the dealer. And here's what he says to me, Ma, and I wanted to see what you make of this. He's talking me through all the problems, and there's like a pump that has to be replaced, and then a couple of valves that got stuck open because the pump was broken. And so there's all this stuff. I don't know how it all hooks up. You know,
yeah.
He's talking to me like I know, but I appreciate
like
him telling
cars,
me. But
yeah,
I don't know what these valves are. And he says, the good news is that we have most of the parts in stock. There are a couple hoses and brackets we'll need to order, and it'll take 4 or 5 days to get them in. But everything else we have in stock, so that's the good news there. And I said, but don't we have to wait for the parts that are going to take 4 or 5 days anyway? That doesn't. And he said, yes, we will. I said, that doesn't seem like good news to me. Like, what difference? What do I care that you have some of it in stock if I still have to wait a week for you to get the other stuff in stock? Now, I told Anna about this exchange and my wife, and she said, I wonder if they're like trained to give you some piece of good news no matter what. Cause like this was another hefty bill, not as big as last summer, but another like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm spending this much on this 10-year-old car moment.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The good news is they have some of the parts, and Anna thinks they just have to find some good news.
I think
do you
she's
think that's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
But it's almost like he was trying to trick me. You know, it's like, by the way, it'll take 4 or 5 days for this other thing. But
yeah,
the good news is, how is that good news for me?
Yeah, well, it's called the bamboozle, and some people are very good at it.
We're going to punch you in the mouth, but the good news is we won't be kicking you in the teeth. Well, but what about the punch?
I love it. I love it. You know what, Johnny? I'm going to tell you this other thing when we get to it. But people, they think they know people aren't listening. We don't listen to each other anymore.
Yeah, well put.
You're stuck on the good news. Oh, yeah, that's good news. And then he's slipping in the news, the important news, and you're still thinking, oh, yeah, that's good news.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I can picture someone being dazed by this bill of materials and labor I was being handed and just, oh, good news. Oh, this is actually good news. Okay. Like just stunned and believing it. It wasn't actually good news. I don't think there's anything left to replace on this vehicle, so I'm hoping it's going to run like a top for a few more years now, but oof, I'm afraid.
Now, you know what my car does?
But tell me.
My car has a flashing light on the left side of the dashboard and back of the steering wheel, and right now mine says, Service A, overdue by 14 days, and it every day tells you how many days you're past this Service A, which I think is just change the oil or something. Yeah. I don't know what it is. And it also flashes off and on constantly. Check windshield wiper fluid. Now, I know those are two very simple things. I can't tell you the anxiety they cause me.
Well, the first one you can ignore for sure.
And then when I try to use the windshield wiper fluid, there's plenty of it in there, I think. It's still working. So now I don't know what to think.
That's
but
maddening.
It is causing me a lot of anxiety.
That would drive me crazy, too. My car used to do the due for service alert as well, but it never runs long enough now for that to come up. It's always getting serviced, so I don't have that problem anymore.
Well, that's what these modern cars do. They're running my life. They're trying to tell me how to run my life, and I am struggling. I am holding hard against the waves of everything overtaking. I'm going to lose, but it's okay.
You know what the Car Talk guys would have said back in the day? It's just put a piece of electrical tape over that light.
Tape over it.
Which I think is a good advice in this situation.
Do you know that in Boston?
Yeah.
Where they still have the window that says, do we cheat them and how? Mm.
That's right. What about it? Oh, just
in
that
gold
it exists.
Letters. It's just still there. It's fun.
Yeah. Cambridge, meh. That's right. I still listen to Car Talk, especially when I'm sick and can't really, you know, don't have the energy to read or even like watch something. I'll just split the car. I like it for car trips too, but I'm the only one who likes it. So it has to be moments where I'm enforcing dad privileges and making everybody listen to 25-year-old episodes of Car Talk. But yeah, driver decides until he doesn't. One time we were driving out to Ann Arbor, which is like, I forget, like a 5-hour drive or something like that. And I put Anna in charge of the music, and my buddy Steve was along for the ride. This was when I did Simpsons Trivia last year. Oh, more on that later, in fact. And I think Anna made it the whole trip without playing a single piece of music that had a melody or like a chorus or a structure that you could get into. It was all sort of, I don't know, indie, screeching, squawking, or what have you.
Oh, good.
God, it was the worst. It felt like the longest drive because there was never any actual like music. I don't know how to describe
it. But music.
Music with a beat that feels like you're going. Oh, so she was banned from being the DJ after that.
But she had a good trip, right?
Oh, we all had a good trip. Yeah, it's just okay. Anna has very refined and hip taste in music, but boy, I can't
she does
to a lot of it.
She does. Why don't you listen to books on tape like something that the children would get into? And
maybe I've never been a books on tape guy, really. But yeah, that's not a bad idea. Mom, speaking of Boston, tangentially, what do you have to tell me about the rats?
Well, I just saw an article in the Boston Globe today that says that during the pandemic, all the rats left. They left the town, and now they're coming back. And what do we do about the rats? But it seems to me that, and you know, I'm not one of these. Oh my God, you can't. They're human beings, or you know, they're living beings. And I'm not like that. But it seems to me the problem isn't the rats. It's the filthy people, and maybe you need more people emptying those trash cans on the sidewalks, or more trash pickup or something. It doesn't seem like it's the rats' fault.
Surely they've considered that, though, wouldn't you think?
Well, the article was all about what do we do about these rats.
And what did they propose to do about the rats?
No, I didn't finish the article.
I have to imagine sanitation is part of the calculus.
Well, I just wonder, did they even consider it? You know, it's very vague. It's like, it was
well, maybe
very
it's vague
because
you didn't finish the article. I mean, if you're going to make it a podcast topic, finish the article at least.
All right. Well, I'm just preempting any killing of the rats.
Well, they're going to kill some
and
rats.
And where did
There's
they
no
go during
that.
The pandemic? Where did they go?
I don't
did
know.
They go on vacation?
Maybe it said in the back half of the article you didn't read.
All right, I'll read the back half of
okay.
it later.
Tune in next week for the exciting conclusion to what the hell is going on with the rats in Boston. Why would they leave during the pandemic? Maybe not as much restaurant trash?
Yes, that's what they said.
Oh, okay. Well, that answers that.
So the trash is back, but pick it up more frequently. Pick it up every day. I don't think it's the rats' fault. I guess I'm looking at this way because I saw a thing, a little blurb. I actually saw it on the internet, not on the show, because I don't stay up that late. But Jimmy Kimmel had a thing, and this finally made me understand why people support Trump, okay? Mm-hmm. Because it has been a complete mystery to me, and this is not a new thing, but he had a woman go out on the street and Jimmy Kimmel yeah. had a representative go out on the street and present people with quotes ascribing them to Biden. And the reaction was, you know, oh, he's the loser. He doesn't know how to do anything. And he's a real travesty. And then the girl says, oh, I'm sorry. I got my notes mixed up. Actually, Trump said that. And these people would come up with, well, he needs to do it that way because blah, 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 and made an excuse. And to me, again, this relates to people aren't listening. They're not listening. They have an idea in their head and they're like robots. They can't get off that idea and they can't see how stupid they look. What is wrong with people? Well, that's what's wrong with people. They're not listening. They're not even listening to themselves.
Did he do it the other way around?
No.
No. So do you think that the Biden lovers are totally immune to that phenomenon you're describing?
I came here to bash Trump. No.
Yeah, well, I think it's one of those moments to me where, like, you're on the verge of grasping the key lesson. Like, I think what you're saying does not just apply to one particular political persuasion. I guess I'll put it that way. And I'm not trying to say everybody's the same and both sides, but yeah, there is a tribalism and a narrow-mindedness that is characteristic of the political culture in this country in general. And I think the fact that Jimmy Kimmel only did that trick one way, in a funny way, speaks to the same thing. Do you understand what I'm getting at? Like,
well, I'm not loving what you're getting at, but.
But you see what I'm getting at. Like,
I do.
God, those late night shows are brutal now. I mean, Colbert, I'm sorry, but like there's no, it's embarrassing. I feel like to watch him, it's all, there's so much political grandstanding and self-satisfaction. And I find it gross. I start to get antsy when I feel like I'm being played to. And when, you know, this goes back to when I was at The Daily Show. And when I was at The Daily Show was when this word clapter became part of the parlance. And it was when one of these TV comedians tells a quote-unquote joke that's, like, not really designed to get laughs. It's designed to garner, like, enthusiastic sympathy from the audience. I mean, it's practically all that, like, John Oliver does, for instance, and it's a lot of what Stephen Colbert does. And I don't think it's performing the function of comedy or one function of comedy, which is to show us perspectives and show us a new light on things that we might not consider in the daily back and forth, you know, to show us some witty, surprising angle on something. And I'm not saying profound political philosophy here. I'm saying an unexpected and perhaps even crystallizing angle, which is what we aspire to. I feel like in my era of The Daily Show, I'm sure there's people who would look back at my era and say, like, it was the start of this very problem that I'm talking about. But I do feel there was a big push creatively when I was there. It was part of the ethos of the show, was to say something incisive and insightful and something different than what is being said everywhere else. Admittedly, a harder task in the era of Twitter and, you know, this constant fire hose of perspectives. But yeah, this tribalism you describe, it's very easy, and both sides do it, to point to the other guys and say, wow, they're so stubborn and narrow-minded. But I think it's a wider problem than just the Trumpers.
Well, to me, it brings up the whole idea of comedy and what it actually is.
Well, it's a lot of things. It's an art form that has many different guises. But this is something that, you know, I'm talking about something that was important to me in this late night venue.
Well, also, I want to say this to you, if I may, and this is in regard to last week's recommendation about a book about a woman that had a lot of illnesses and went to India and had stem cell treatment and blah, blah, blah. Well, it seems like in the last chapter, it all went to hell and she decided to take charge of her life. Everything that was done as far as the stem cell stuff undid itself. And really, it was all in her head.
Is this an unrecommendation? Mom's recommendation last week was The Fox Wife, right?
No.
Oh, what are we talking about? Which
this
one?
This is How I Saved My Life.
Oh, How I Saved My Life. Sorry. That was...
So anyway, it seemed like it was this miraculous story. And in the end, it really isn't.
Are you unrecommending it?
I'm unrecommending it.
Oh, wow. We'll have to go back and burn those tapes.
I went on Instagram to follow her and see what she has. And the first video she had was how to evacuate your bowels completely. And I just said, I'm out.
Oh, so you did it. Oh, no, I see. What you mean.
Followed her.
Follow, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. So that's all. That's all about that.
I have a technique for evacuating my bowels completely. I didn't think it was worthy of a YouTube video, though. Wow, I've been missing out. I guess I have a lot of wisdom to share with the world. Huh. Well, maybe on next week's episode of the podcast, I can take you through it. I'd say it's a one-step process, so it won't take me too long to explain it. So that is an...
I mean, really, we have this wonderful invention, the internet, where you can share so many...
Yeah.
So many wonderful ideas, and this is what she shows...
Yeah, well, here we are talking about it, and here I am spouting off about tribalism for the 100th time. Nobody needed to hear that. Probably people were clicking fast forward through that part. Jesus, we're tired of hearing John talk about this. Sorry, everybody.
All right,
so that's an unrecommendation of, say it again, Mom, the title of the terrible book.
This is How I Saved My Life.
This is How I Saved My Life. Oh, that was the one you recommended along with Payback, is that right?
Yeah.
The Mel Gibson movie?
Which I still would recommend, yeah. So.
Yeah, well, you love Mel Gibson, so. Okay, I feel I've thoroughly muddied the waters on that front.
Yes, you have.
What do you want to say about MASH? All you gave me was the bullet point MASH. This is the most mysterious item.
Well, I read MASH by Richard Hooker because I thought I was going to recommend it this week. But... instead, what I would like to offer is the idea of reading the book, watching the movie, and then watching the television show and see how it evolves into MASH that probably everyone knows. But the book, this is what fascinates me, is how someone read this book and interpreted it into a movie and then a television show, because the book was rather Mild, I'll say. You got the gist of two doctors that are zany and making the best of the war and such.
And for context, because not everybody will know what MASH is as we talk about it. Most famously, a long-running television show set in a medical unit in Korea during the Korean War. Right? That's enough context. Right?
Yes.
Okay, proceed.
Yes. The book is about two doctors, as the show was. But here's what the book is called. MASH, a novel about three army doctors. And Dad says, isn't that title just riveting? Yeah. Makes you want to read it. And
Well, it doesn't hide anything, that's for sure.
No, it's pretty basic. And the book is so basic, but it fascinates me that someone read it and fleshed it out. I don't know. That whole idea never occurred to me that somebody has to take it in a direction and flesh it out to make a story that people will relate to and enjoy. I know that probably isn't a new idea to you.
Yeah. Well, Robert Altman specifically turned the book into the film. But I do think that the TV show is the iconic face of this franchise. I'll be honest, Mom. I like to style myself a student of 20th century pop culture, but I did not know that MASH originated as a book. I thought the film was the original work. You know, and a lot of times these books that turn into famous properties, you go back to the book itself and it's like, how did they get that from this? Right. I've always found adaptation fascinating in that respect. You know, in college, my senior thesis was about Final Fantasy, the video game series, and specifically studying the differences between the Japanese releases of the game and the American release, and how by tracking these differences, you can discern the evolution of these two cultures in Japan and in the West, mainly the United States. And the different versions of a single idea or a text, let's say, have a lot of insight to offer. So, yeah, I was fascinated when you told me that MASH was a book first, because I had no idea. And you don't see how this came from that, I feel like, is what you're saying.
Well, I'm hearing what you're saying, how it evolves. And but to me, you know, this could have just been passed over as a very interesting story in surgeons, unlike we really ever think of it. They do what they call meatball surgery, and that is fix the big stuff and send them on to a bigger hospital for the fine details. When we think of surgery in a different way, I think in the culture of today.
Yeah.
And of course, this is war surgery, but you're saying Robert Altman read this book and said, yes, this could be a great movie.
Well, I think Robert Altman read the book and conceived it as a movie that could comment indirectly, but not that indirectly, on the Vietnam War. The film was released 1970. The film came out. And I know Altman hated the TV show, which he had nothing to do with, and, you know, thought it had a totally different point of view. So it's something that evolved a number of times. The TV show was on for like a decade plus, and the finale is legendarily like the most watched episode of TV ever. And now it's forgotten. Like, I was eager to explain to people the general premise of MASH because I feel like people don't talk about it anymore. And if you're younger than me, I'd say almost, you might not have heard of it. I don't enjoy the show. Like, I don't, the appeal to it, I can see how Alan Alda is charming and sardonically funny in his way. But I never enjoyed the show. Do you like the TV show?
I did.
You did.
I did,
right?
Like, yeah. The TV show. And I'll tell you, because I think sometimes when you feel like you have a thin connection or a connection, no matter how thin, there's a curiosity about it. My father went to serve in the Second World War, and it ended before he got there. He was on his way home. The Korean War broke out, and he was then assigned there. He taught people how to parachute out of planes, but he never talked about that. He only ever talked about how he set up a hot dog business, and that was what he talked about. So to me, in watching it, I can see in this medical unit how horrible and how minimal comfort was. You know, you were there to do a job and you did it. And my father's sounded like pure joy. I mean, in real life, he was a track coach. So he pole vaulted every day and he parachuted every day in Korea. And, you know, that was it. But you were kind of looking for, my dad never talks about the war. Maybe there's a clue here. There isn't, but
no, yeah. I tried without much success to get Boo. I don't know if you said his name already, but that's what we called Mom's dad, Boo, to talk about his experiences in the service. And I think he fancied himself. Remember when we did Catch 22, Mom? Remember Milo Minderbinder?
Yeah.
You know, he's the wheeler and dealer. The capitalist, basically, on the base. Very clever and crafty. And I think Boo imagined himself as a Milo Minderbinder type, you know, and that's why he wanted to talk about the hot dog business. The clever American ingenuity, cutting corners, working the angles type of guy. Yeah. And anything that didn't adhere to that myth, he had no use for.
Yeah.
You know, Boo was always crafting his character for you, even though he would never admit to such. But it was so transparent.
Well, he tried to get it out of him. Yeah, he would say to you that he has a lot of stories and some of them are true.
That's right. He would admit that much. I mean, he was self-aware to a degree, but not to the degree that would get him to actually A, shut up about the BS, or B, talk about something real that you wanted to hear about. Yeah. Milo Minderbinder. Wow. Well, that was a little tromp through military pop culture we had there, Mom.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do MASH on the podcast sometime, except I don't want to watch MASH.
Okay.
It's too dour.
But maybe we should do another one that that went from a book to a movie to TV.
An adaptation special. Yeah, maybe so. I like that idea. How about Dune? Oh, that's what we should do. Read Dune and then go watch the movies. That'll take you a while.
I guess so. Do I have to read all the books?
No, the first one's a heavy enough lift.
Oh, good. I can't wait.
I loved it. Ooh, I was proselytizing that Dune last year. I got Anna to read it. I got my friend Steve to read it. That book really opened some ideas up for me. I love it.
All right.
But today is not a day for Dune. Today is a day for something I may love even more. I cannot believe we have never talked about The Simpsons to this point on the podcast. Are you ready for it now, Mom?
We haven't? Yes, I am.
We haven't. I went back and checked. We never have. I went through all our episodes.
I just found my book where I have every podcast till I lost this book, and then I just found it again. I don't think there is any Simpsons.
No, there's no Simpsons in there, but there will be now. Let's get to it. In April 1996, when The Simpsons was at the peak of its powers, Fox aired an episode of the ubiquitous cartoon entitled 22 Short Films About Springfield. It was perhaps the most daunting feat of creative collaboration that the show's writing staff had taken on to that point, a series of loosely connected vignettes that explore what had by then become an enormous cast of familiar characters, from Mr. Burns to comic book guy to Cletus the slack-jawed yokel. Even the accident-prone Bumblebee man gets his turn in the spotlight. Here's a clip of the episode's most famous segment, which depicts an unforgettable luncheon.
Clams.
Ooh.
Superintendent, I hope you're ready for mouth-watering hamburgers.
I thought we were having steamed clams.
No, no, I said steamed hams. That's what I call hamburgers.
You call hamburgers steamed hams?
Yes, it's a regional dialect.
What region?
Upstate New York.
Really? Well, I'm from Utica, and I've never heard anyone use the phrase steamed hams.
Oh, not in Utica, no, it's an Albany expression.
I see.
The Simpsons is available on Disney Plus, and it's on TV all the time. You can hardly swing a stick without hitting The Simpsons. Mom, did this episode steam your hams, or was it more of a steamed clam?
Oh, I thought this was... I love this because everybody was in it. Everybody was in it, and it was so much fun to see everybody. And I'm in particular going to tell you that I was very happy to see Apu. I know he got cut from the ranks, but I love Apu because I always looked at him as a hardworking, really making a go of it kind of guy.
Yeah.
I loved Apu, and I guess, you know, we're against stereotypes or whatever, but I just saw him as a fella that came to this country and made it, and really made it. And I just loved him.
Yeah, Apu is a great American, and I love his little story of he gets to party once a year, apparently, and he has quite a party in the course of 5 minutes, 4 minutes, I guess it ends up being.
Yes, yep.
I think of you for whatever reason, even though this never happened to me. There is a story that they come back to a couple times throughout the episode with Lisa getting gum stuck in her hair. And I love this story because it is. It's perfect. First time Marge sees it, she says, if I remember my Heloise, peanut butter is the key. And I love that line, if I remember my Heloise, because the gum in your hair is one of those like pieces of like urban lore that everybody has a like half-remembered solution for it. And so eventually, like, it seems like the whole town is offering suggestions on how to get this gum out of the hair. But it's this tiny little morsel of the culture that they draw out in this way that resonates. Like, it makes perfect sense that gum in the hair would be something that everybody needs to weigh in on and that everybody's got the surefire solution for. But as a device to sort of unite basically all the characters who don't get their own story kind of pass through this gum story. So you see like 100 people by the end of it. I love how they make a lot out of something so tiny and yet something that we can all recognize. That's great comedy to me.
Yes. Well, it also was interesting to me as it started that Bart and Milhouse are spitting off the bridge, which is really something from, I thought, days of old, that people don't do that. Kids don't do that anymore. To see that was, it looked so innocent. Of course, then towards the end, they're doing chocolate sauce and whatever, which could be dangerous, really.
Yeah, they're on the overpass, I should make clear. So they're spitting onto cars. And yeah, then they get up the ketchup and mustard bottles. Yeah, you know, a lot of the stuff that the kids do on The Simpsons is stuff that the writers did or encountered as kids, right? So as I kids, do think that knowingly so, the Simpson kids are always a little bit of a throwback. But maybe there's inveterate overpass spitters out there among our listeners, and I'm wrong.
Still
a beloved activity. All the overpasses around here now have those chain link fences.
Right.
On them,
yes.
So you can't do that anymore.
So that people can hang their protest sheets on them.
Yeah, that's right. Spitting has been replaced by putting up the bed sheet with your political views
with
on
a message on it.
That's true. Mom, I hinted at it in the intro. Do you know which segment of these has taken on a life of its own and become famous in its own right?
What does that mean?
Well, I'll just tell
you. Which one of these?
Which one of the segments has taken on, which one of the short films, so to speak, has taken on a life of its own in the online culture? What would you guess?
I'm going to say, I don't know.
Mom doesn't hear the clip, by the way. I should let the listeners know, because I already played part of it. But it's the steamed hams lunch with Skinner and Chalmers. And it took on a life of its own. If you go on YouTube and search for steamed hams, you will, speaking of adaptation, as we were earlier, you will find hundreds of remixes of this segment. Steamed hams as if it were a cartoon that were banned in Soviet Russia. Steamed hams, except all the words have been chopped up and put in alphabetical order. I saw one the other day that took every frame of steamed hams and put them in order of how loud they were. So you're watching it and it's just this, like, you know, it's like avant-garde art. And it just is this slow ramp up of volume as you watch it. Anyway, it's this eclectic mix of art projects almost all around steamed hams. And some of them are quite elaborate. Like the banned in Soviet Russia steamed hams is like somebody created their own thing. And it's quite a work. To seemingly no end. But yeah, so search for steamed hams on YouTube and see how thoroughly this segment has been adapted. It is very funny. It's so well played with the Skinner and Chalmers characters, and sort of it is the extreme of their awkward interactions. But it, you know, watching that back in the day, I wouldn't have pegged it as like this will become a cultural phenomenon, but it did.
Yeah.
What was your favorite segment?
My favorite was, of course, the Apu party, the 5-minute party. And I also liked, I like Barney and Mo.
When the Moe's gets robbed, you mean?
Let's see. What do I have? Student loans payment.
Yeah, that's Snake. When Snake comes in and robs.
Right.
Did you notice what school Snake went to?
No.
Yeah, they have him wearing his college t-shirt in that episode. Snake, the criminal character basically on the show, is revealed in this episode to have attended Middlebury.
Yay!
Right down the road from us in the great state of Vermont. The kind of great state. I don't want to give Vermont too much credit. Let's not get carried away.
Well, they can have a little.
No, that's fine, I guess. It's no New Hampshire, though, that's for sure. Don't get too big for your britches there, Vermont.
Vermont is a very pretty state.
Yeah, it's fine, I guess.
These notes that I made are terrible.
Great. Then I can tell the rest of the conversation is just going to steam right along. What else you got,
no,
Mom?
No, I mean, I wrote everything down. Mr. Burns on the bicycle bill for two with Smithers. I always find them very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dr. Nick? Do you like Dr. Nick?
There's nobody in this episode that I don't love. I mean, I'm hard-pressed to think of a Simpsons character from this classic era that I don't love. But yeah, Dr. Nick with his treatment for hypochondria. It's such a great moment in the series for me, and it could only exist at this point in the series, I feel, where it had been around long enough to establish this robust and entertaining and familiar by then cast of characters, and yet not to the point, as it would be a few years down the line, where everybody felt played out. I think The Simpsons is the greatest TV show ever.
Wow, that's quite a statement.
And I would character that's for the first 10 seasons. And after that, yeah, there's some good stuff in there. And you'll see an article every once in a while like, hey, The Simpsons is actually good again now. And whatever. Whenever I see it, I'm just depressed by how all the voices are different and everything's in HD. And like, it's just not the same show now. And if you love it, that's fine. I'm not one of those, you can't have it type of guys. But
well,
for me.
Well, you sound like one of those.
Well, for me, that what I choose is the, you know, watch whatever you want. But the 10 seasons in the 90s are the gold to me, especially yeah. the middle half of that run. And on that note, if you are listening to this before March 21st, 2024, and you're in the Chicago area, why not come out on March 21st, 2024 at 7 p.m. at Beguile Brewing on the North Side and come play my Simpsons trivia game? I developed this during the pandemic. I don't know. I forget if I've told this story on the podcast before, but, you know, I had my bunch of guys that I typically hang out with on Friday nights. And during the pandemic, we would get together over Zoom, as people did. And I had this Simpsons trivia game from way back, from like around the year 2000, I think it came out. And we would go through the cards. I'd read questions on the cards, and we made a little game of it. And then we ran out of cards, and I decided, you know, I could write better questions than this anyway. And so I started running the game myself, and I would write 50 questions, and we'd have a trivia night, and the game got a little more elaborate over the years, and now it's ready for the public. I actually did it in public a couple times last year, but this is the first time in Chicago proper that I'm doing it. Come on out. It'll be fun. Right, Mom? You've attended, haven't you?
Yes.
Didn't you come to Simpsons Night one night?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I did not partake of the favors, but I did come.
The refreshments, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's typically refreshments involved. You know, when I started doing it, you know, maybe around the time I'd done like five or six installments, my friend started to say, you're going to run out of questions soon. You're not going to be able to write any more questions. And I thought they were right. I was like, I wonder when I'll come up against it. What I found is the show is so dense and has so many pop cultural references and connections. I'm at like 2,600 questions now in my library.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
Still going. So some of the choicest questions from that database will be on display. And there's visuals and it's fun. So
it is a lot of fun. It really is fun. You'll be laughing.
You do not have to be a Simpsons obsessive to play my game, by the way. You will have fun even if you don't know the show. And you'll be able to play even if you don't know the show.
Because even Johnny didn't blur an answer very well when I played, and I got an answer. So
That's right. You weren't supposed to be able to read part of the image that I blurred out. But Mom, with her sharp eyes, she saw through the picture. You have no idea how high up I turned that pixelate slider on Photoshop in the weeks after that. There's nothing getting past me now.
It really is so much fun. It's so much fun to watch everybody having fun. Let me just say this. If you're really looking for a good time, a fun night out with friends, or your wife, or your girlfriend, or your boyfriend, this is the thing to do. This is a great thing to do.
Thank you for that plug, Mom. Yeah, so that's March 21st, 7 p.m. at Beguile Brewing here on the North Side in Chicago. This is an all-time great episode of The Simpsons for me, Mom. What is your grade for 22 short films about Springfield?
I gave it an A+. I think you could watch this over and over and still be amused.
Yeah. Break out the clangs and whoops. Here's a piece of trivia for you, Mom, that will not be in the quiz on March 21st. The title of the episode, 22 Short Films About Springfield, comes from an obscure independent film about a famous Canadian pianist. Name that pianist.
Glenn Gould.
Glenn Gould is correct. Very good, Mom. The reference is to 32 short films about Glenn Gould, one of my favorite movies for reasons that are obvious to Mom. But you can imagine when I was a nerdy kid and this Glenn Gould reference came up on The Simpsons, one of a few Glenn Gould references that they've made Wow, I was over the moon because I idolized old Glenn when I was about this age, high school years. All right. That was a fun one. I cannot believe we've never done The Simpsons before on the show, but now we have. What's your recommendation for this week, Mom?
Well, my recommendation was going to be MASH, but we already discussed that.
Oh, so you have no recommendation for me?
I don't, because I just thought this was going to be such a slam dunk that it wasn't.
Oh, okay. Well, we better come up with something to recommend real quick. What have I got on my desk here that I can recommend? Oh, here we go. How's this? Burpless fish oil. That's my recommendation for this week. Burpless fish oil pills. The last time I went to get my eyes checked, the doctor told me I was at an age where I should be getting omega-3. This is the thing to get, right? So I'm
going to send you some better vitamins than that.
What's better than burpless fish oil?
Yeah. Ugh. I don't know. Is it really burpless?
I do not have any fish burps from taking these nature-made burpless fish oil. This is not a plug.
No.
I am not being paid to promote this nutritional supplement, and these statements have not been reviewed by the Food and Drug Administration. But for lack of a better recommendation, what else? Oh, scissors. I can also recommend scissors.
No. Listen They're great to me. For cutting. If I send you some real eye vitamins, will you take them?
Eye vitamins? Yeah, sure. No, I have them on my desk here because I take them with my lunch.
Ugh, okay.
Although I don't know if they work. Does your body absorb them if you take? I don't know.
I don't know, but I'm going to send you some vitamins that my eye doctor swears by.
Vitamin I.
And she's, yeah.
That'll do it for this edition of Pop Mom. This episode of the podcast was edited by Scott Jones. Thank you, Scott. Mom and I will be back soon to talk about more pop culture. What should we talk about, Mom?
Definitely something interesting.
Definitely. We'll see how definite it is next time. Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, tell your friends. And we love to get email. It's popmom@ological.net. Talk to us about anything. We love you. Mom and I will talk to you again next week. Bye for now, Mom.
Bye, Johnny. I love you.
Love you too.